We have like 2 million excess retirees in the United States.
Wait, what makes him an excess? How come he's not one of
because
the...
Because he
shouldn't
like,
have retired yet. He's an
he's
early
like
retirer.
He's like 56 or something.
He's yeah, young man.
Well, the economists call them excess.
I'll take up his spot because I won't retire.
Why? Why? You're European.
Gonna keep hustling. I work because I like it at this stage.
Oh, God, stop that. Welcome to People vs. Algorithms, the show about detecting patterns in media, technology, and culture. I'm Brian Marcy. I'm joined, as always, by Trey Young and Alex Schleifer. Guys, how are you? We're trying a different intro this week.
I'm
good.
Great.
I'm good. Yeah.
Very excited.
Positive vibes, man. Positive vibes.
Positive vibes only. That's Alex's hat. I want to run through a couple of news items.
I thought
you
were going to do a big intro. Where's the intro?
That is the intro. I want to run through a couple of...
What about the thoughtful personal essay?
It's coming back next week.
Yeah, next week.
I hate it happening. When you skip this. You can't just skip.
Well, I got to fly. I got to fly to London.
We're recorded on in your car on the way to the airport. Okay, right, so Brian, carry on with your monologue.
So I want to do the news, and then I want to play a little game where we look 5 years ahead and do some prognostication based on everything that's happened in AI. But I want to set it up with some of the news items, one of which is Sam Altman is, I knew the cut of this guy's jib. We can run back the episodes. I was right on this one. He's battling with Scarlett Johansson. Some people noticed that the voice in the GPT-4.0 sounds a bit like ScarJo. Is that what they call her? And Scarlett Johansson turned out, she posted that she had met with OpenAI and discussed voicing their little chatbot and didn't happen. And then suddenly, weirdly, for a company that's being sued for taking people's creative work without permission, they developed something that sounds a lot like her. Is this like 3D chess, or is this just a massive PR fail? Troy?
I don't know. I just don't think it's very interesting. I
Troy. You really got to stop.
All right.
You should go to improv classes. Yeah, can we send you to improv
classes? Yeah, we might need to do this.
Okay.
Let's get a
the way I see it, the way I see these things is I just replay what would have happened inside of a corporation or, you know, to create this scenario. We know that Sam Altman and the likes of him think that Her was a seminal movie that predicted the future of people falling in love with robots, and that he was in a meeting and someone said, we're going to do voices and intonation and tonality and all that stuff with the AI. And he's like, let's make it sound like Scarlett Johansson. And then somebody kind of took it a little too seriously. And she's like, oh, you know, Sam really wants it to sound like ScarJo. So they're like, get a voice actor in. We can't get her. And it ended up sounding like it. And it's an embarrassing thing of just like people optimizing to a bad idea. That's it.
That's it. I think it's a little bit bigger because it plays into the narrative, right? I mean, this guy... Okay, the board said...
Why, because you think Sam Altman's a putz.
I think he's dishonest. I think he's fundamentally dishonest. And I know it doesn't matter in Silicon Valley, and it didn't matter the last round, and I think it's going to be different this time. Because his own board said he wasn't being candid. His exit from Y Combinator, get on that story. I'd like to know more about that. The wholesale theft of content, I mean, the Sora, like that Mira Murati...
Is he a Peter Thiel operative?
Something I don't know. Else. It's just,
there's something going on. I agree with you.
You mean on behalf of Peter Thiel?
Yeah, there's just something wrong with Sam Altman. I agree with Brian.
But I don't. Is this a sort of great man theory of history that emanates, that oozes out of Silicon Valley, as our spokesman over there, Alex? That these honesty and sort of being straightforward is for the putzes on the East Coast, the media.
I
people.
Think the jury's out on him. It's pretty split over here. I know some...
Oh,
some
Elon Musk. Even Elon Musk calls him a liar.
Right. But Elon Musk is against versus everyone. So it's split, right? The jury's out there. I think there are a lot of people who mistrust him and who also so are very anxious about the fact that OpenAI is such a messy company with a messy structure they were so brittle. And it's not only the copyright stuff, it's just the structure of the company, what's going on behind the scenes, what happened with the board ousting, and just the way they announce stuff and the way they handle the ScarJo thing. It's just like, doesn't look like a well-run company. On the other side, there are people who really respect Sam and see him as a visionary. It's definitely kind of split, and we'll see.
You know what, Brian, there's a type. Let's rewind to high school and then add some of the perversions that wealth and proximity to power and Hollywood and all that bring. And these are nerds that, fast-talking nerds that got a got tremendous influence and power. And I worked and lived in Silicon Valley and in San Francisco for years. There's just a kind of self-righteousness about and real confidence because they're all super smart and they were smart in high school and they kind of have a tremendous confidence in what they believe and how they see the world. And when you combine that with the adulation that you get when you're Sam Altman and with power and stuff, you get kind of weird Mark Andreessen type behavior.
Mm. But it ultimately, I get the sense from your shifting in your chair, your gamer chair, that it doesn't matter in the long run, that this is just a freight train and that, you know,
OpenAI is going out of business at some point, just to be clear, okay. But we can get into that in segment two.
Has nothing to do with this. Okay.
No. OpenAI is going to run out of gas.
But they're building a search engine.
Let's save it for... There's already a couple of search engines. We should save it for the next segment.
Fine. Let's move on to the next topic. We're doing the lightning round. Microsoft is baking AI into hardware. We're seeing this. I mean, I saw a full page ad in the FT about AI being part of a clothes dryer, but they're coming out with Copilot PCs. And one notable feature is Recall, which screenshots what you're doing at all times, which, you know, obviously.
Well, it's memory. I love that, actually.
Yeah, Troy and I have been using an app like that called Rewind.ai that does exactly that on your Mac. And it's all hosted on the computer. I actually think that this is where we break out of the hypothetical use cases and into more real life use cases. When you start building the behavior of being able to ask, like I was booking flights yesterday and I had a multi-stage trip and it's completely impossible for me to book flights. Like, what was that, the one I just booked and where I was looking at? Being able to ask an AI, like, how much was the Air Canada flight? It would be really useful. And I think that's where we're going to, this deep integration with the OS is starting now. Apple has their WWDC event coming up. This is where we're going to see, like, this thing actually picking up speed and going beyond the just chatbot. Yeah.
So what's the implications of this becoming a hardware story as much as a software story?
Well, there's a privacy implication, right? Because it doesn't ever have to leave your computer to go to the cloud and do it all. So if it's basically like personal memory that resides on your computer. They also showed off another kind of DALL-E-esque image generator that could take your sketches and render them into things. There's an interesting little catch on that, is it does it locally. It's image generation locally on the model on your machine. But then what it does is it fires it off. Once it's done, it fires it off to the cloud to make sure that it's okay, that it's not, man, I presume, pornographic or something like that, or compromise. I don't know what they're looking for. But so I think that you're going to see a lot of the basic AI functionality take place on your own hardware, whether it's your mobile phone or your PC.
Think about it this way. There's two things that are hurting these companies right now. One, the upgrade cycles are getting longer because the processors are outpacing the software. Like, you could have a four-year-old M1 Apple laptop and never need to change it, right? These things can run everything you need. Brian, you're smiling, but
I'll tell you why I was smiling.
Okay. And I think this is going to accelerate the upgrade cycles. And I expect Apple will put a bunch of features that, whether it's true or not, will require the new phone to work.
Go figure.
Of course. Second thing, I mean, follow the money, right? Second thing is, if you offload the compute onto people's computers, you're hitting the most expensive thing that you have running AI. And that's where a benefit that both Apple and Microsoft have is that they can build machines that offload some of that computer to the customer. And so that's going to be huge if they can cut their costs around that.
So basically, we're going to have to buy these devices. Like,
they're going to make you buy these devices.
Tapped out services with all the bullshit, like recurring fees.
It might even be features like, imagine a smart background that generates whatever, right? It could be just cosmetic stuff like that, which is often why people get these things. There's definitely going to be camera stuff. And all of these things are going to force an upgrade cycle.
Alex, what do you think runs on the AI that's local versus the cloud?
I like the idea of what people have been pushing, which the AI actually gives you pretty quick surface level answers for quick queries or quick things like find this on my computer, what time is it, intelligently set an alarm, scan my calendar, all that type of stuff, and then taps into a cloud AI when the conversation becomes a little bit more complex, like rewrite this article in the style of a New Yorker post or whatever. But I think all the interfacing with the UI of the operating system should be handled on device. And imagine just being able to say, hey, change this setting, right? Change my switch to the other Wi-Fi network. All of that stuff should be possible. And it's going to change the way we interface with computers. And it's going to change people's behaviors and their expectations that they can talk to their machine. So I expect a lot of that stuff. But my issue with the other stuff, like, sure, you can do image generation on device. Some of the stuff is going to be impressive. But more and more, like, these on-cloud devices are also going to become more impressive. And that's the one that people are going to want to use. So I don't know if that heavy, heavy stuff is going to happen on device yet.
Okay, so wouldn't this speak to basically Apple making its own like AI search engine with Siri? They're going to have to eventually, I mean, they're eventually going to come out with something.
We're going to see it at WWDC, right? And the current...
Because the government's sniffing around. They don't like these deals that they're doing with Google.
So it's June 10th, so it's going to be soon. So they've been trying to hash out a deal with Google that's not working out, and they're going to announce a deal with OpenAI, which is why, Troy, that might be a way to like keep OpenAI open. I don't think, yeah.
But
I think we're going to see a lot of that stuff. Yeah.
Right. Okay. No, good. I would only say that if it's a crazy time, Brian, meaning
I know
there's so much power and economic benefit in control of this new communicator, which when you think about it, could disrupt all of the ways that we use applications, that we get information, that we find products. Like, Apple cannot give that up, right? Now, Google's going to do it, clearly, and OpenAI's got their own products. But I think that it's not just like outsourcing search to Google and giving them that spot in Safari. I really think that it's existential. Like, they have to have their own base models and they have to have that capability.
Wait, it's existential for Apple?
$5 trillion. Now, the short term might mean there's a partnership because others are ahead, but I think long term, they're going to really need to do what essentially Microsoft is doing already, which is innovate the operating system around core AI capability that's embedded in hardware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That leads nicely into the other news segment item.
I love the way we're moving fast. I love it.
Yeah. So Google AI overviews came out. We didn't talk about this enough last week, so I want to double back on it because we lumped it together with the OpenAI stuff. And the AI overviews and search is the main story in the media industry. It's seen as a death knell. Google claims that more people click on that result. The bottom line is the number of zero clicks are going to go way up. Nilay Patel, he talks about Google Zero and preparing for it. Obviously, that's extreme. These things don't happen overnight, et cetera. But Troy, what's the immediate and then medium-term impact of Google being dragged? Let's face it, they have like the best economic engine in the world. This is not something Google necessarily wants to do. But they're being dragged into upending what's been the mainstay of the open web. We've talked about it a lot, but it's here now, isn't it? Alex's spaceship is hovering. It's landed, I think.
What's your question?
What's the near-term and medium-term impact of this on publishers?
Well, this is not unprecedented. We have seen the SERP, that's the search engine results page, expand to include a lot of core utilities of the internet over time, whether that's been weather, sports scores, flights, hotel information. There's a lot of things that have moved, obviously all of comparison shopping or a lot of it at the SKU level that have moved into the SERP, and as well as obviously tons and tons of algorithmic changes in terms of what Google asks publishers to create. I think that to me, there's two sides to it. One is Google is going to face pressure from a lot of new places that could not challenge the hegemony of search. And we'll get into that because that's kind of part of when we talk about the five-year horizon. So there are going to be new places where people get information where they would have previously turned to Google. And Google is going to expand the aperture of how much attention they take into the page, essentially by now including basic knowledge in the SERP. Like, I think of it as they're now going to take in more and more of evergreen information. But there's still a reason to have pages. There's still a reason to get information off of Google, whether that's human point of view or detailed comparisons or the reassurance of a media brand and an individual reviewing a product, or to actually get down to the transaction layer where you can buy something, hire someone, use a service, buy a service, whatever. And so I think there's still going to be the same kind of mechanics of search engine optimization, which I guess becomes more of a chat optimization. Links are still the same. Some people call them citations. Maybe they're more compressed, so there are only the top result gets traffic. But I still think that the kind of output of these kind of platforms and discovery engines and knowledge engines like Google will still lead to traffic for publishers. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of hysteria right now. There were a lot of sort of high-carb visits to publisher properties that were like one and dones and just part of the game of maximizing number of impressions at very, very low CPMs. So my hope is, yes, the quality goes up, that the cost of impressions go up, that yield, essentially the amount that you pay for an impression, becomes higher quality, and that publishers may get less, but hopefully better. And I mean, there's always a certain amount of hysteria whenever your primary distribution point shifts. But I don't think it's the apocalypse. I disagree.
I mean, it's what publishers get has been getting worse since the beginning. I mean, this has happened before, but every time it happens, I think publishers end up worse off. And I ran this by you, Troy, during a call. But so let's do a thought exercise and imagine the computer of the future that is the Star Trek computer. You know, Picard goes and asks like pretty complex queries out of this computer that spits out an answer. And this computer is fully trusted, right? Like there's a lot of trust behind the machine. And what we've seen in the last couple of weeks is a real demo of a computer that can respond to you, number one, and B, Google's direct path towards becoming that, including the fact that they showed off screenshots where web was a tab, the first, and it wasn't the first tab. And so,
wait, explain that a little bit. What does that mean?
Well, right now on Google, you have images, you have news, you have videos, yeah. Right? There's screenshots floating around with web being a tab. So your actual search is a tab on Google.
So it's like vintage search.
It's vintage search. And nice. And so if you imagine the computer
classic
of the future being
blue links,
being something that you just talk to, then I think it's existential for a lot of the content that exists, unless, you know, you're very personality based, unless you're fiction. But I think that non-interactive content is going to be put under huge pressure on the internet. Because just imagine if there's an AI that you have a connection with, right? And I think it'll get there, right? That you feel like you trust, that speaks in the tone you want. Either it's robotic the way you want it, Brian, or it's like very kind of charming the way Troy might want it, or sarcastic or whatever. Let's say you have this machine that runs your life, and then you have Google and Apple controlling the inputs, the entryway into that. Then the end state is just to have you just talk to their machine,
So, hey, Troy, so
whatever
like
happens,
how you do that.
whatever happens, Google is not.
I mean, I get
Google
it.
Is not
I
thinking
think
about publishers.
It's,
Google
it's
is not
fun
thinking
to
about
play.
Publishers.
I think it's fun to play in this world, but there's a lot of reasons that I think it's either going to take an immense amount of time or it's just not going to happen.
Okay.
Let me
put this other thing forward. There's an infinite amount of content on the internet. The only thing that's missing is a good editor. You can't tell me that the internet isn't creating content for free that would match the New Yorker or the New York Times, et cetera. It's all there. And what you have with AI is that you're creating massive editors at scale that can pull out this content. They don't need these guys after a while. And I wouldn't be surprised.
You know what I like to do, Brian? You know, Alex, I can help you with this because I can break it down in layers because it's a layer cake. Yeah. It's a layer cake. And we could go through this layer cake and this will be an elegant kind of move into the next section. But if we break it down into the layer cakes, we can just look at what's going to happen to each layer, right? With AI. So the first layer is like platforms or starting points, right? That's Google or that's hardware or that's the chat interface on WhatsApp, you know, which is a really interesting new surface area. But it's usually combined with communication, discovery, or some utility. Do you guys mm-hmm. follow me? Like mm-hmm. search helps you find stuff. That's discovery. Communication is what you use, you know, WhatsApp for. So that layer is really interesting because to me, there's going to be more competition for Google than ever from others. So the example of the day would be, I can now have a conversation with the Llama model, which is Meta's model, on WhatsApp in the search chat field at the top of WhatsApp. And I can literally get back search responses. It's basically Perplexity inside of WhatsApp. And there's going to be many of those interface points that people use to get information that used to just be dominated 90-some% by Google.
Right.
That's the first layer, right?
Especially when you start being able to add the bot into a group conversation and then query the bot.
You can add the bot into a group, but it could be manifest in lots of places. Who wins in that game? This is just level one, right? In that game, hardware wins, right? People that can that have lots of surface area like Meta that has Instagram and WhatsApp and Facebook, they do pretty well there because they're already touching billions of people, right? And I think people that have monetization ultimately do really well there because someone has to pay for all these queries, okay? The second layer I think of, Alex, is the UGC layer. And that's the layer where the people of the world put their content. Right? That's Reddit and that's TikTok and that's all the places that a repository is for human content energy, right? And what we're seeing right now is that layer is becoming more valuable, right?
Yeah.
You're seeing Reddit UGC become more.
UGC won. I mean,
YouTube is winning. Reddit is winning. It's interesting. Then you have a sort of information layer and comparison and all the stuff we do. I think of that as being like whataboutcom used to do or what any, but it's much more than that. It's TripAdvisor is UGC, I suppose. It's Kayak, it's Expedia, it's realtor.com, it's weather, it's the sports sites. It's sites that provide information. And I think that those interfaces, even though Google has absorbed a lot of that over the years, they still exist. Right? You can get sports scores on Google, but if you want sports scores and analysis and content, you still go to Yahoo Sports or ESPN or wherever you go. So I think that that layer is going to get pressurized and it's going to change. There's going to be compression in that layer. Then there's a layer that matters to a lot of affiliate people, right? It's evaluation, reassurance, the stamp of a brand that says, buy this. Does that layer disappear? I ask you, does that layer create any utility even in an agentic world, like an AI-powered agentic world? I think it still can exist because people want the reassurance that someone has evaluated a product or service and finds value in it. Similarly, point of view, analysis, insight, people like Brian Morrissey writing about the industry, does that layer get compressed or discombobulated? I don't think so. I think it really matters.
Some layers will. I think the review side of things. The only reason people don't go to Reddit for every time they need to find out if a product is good or bad is an interface issue. It's 100% an interface issue. All the information is in there, and it's way better than
I would agree with that.
Kind of, except it's not really organized. And if it could be organized.
Guess what? It's not really organized, not really edited. Guess what AI is really, really
That's what AI does. That's right. Yeah. Okay. So
but I think this puts an end to some of the games that publishers have been playing.
For sure.
Yeah.
And the last state layer is both, you guys, I don't know how much you see of this, but it's sort of the aggregator layer and the retailer layer. And that layer is, for example, if you're Expedia, you connect to all of the airlines' APIs and create a billing relationship with all those APIs so that you can compare and book flights with the airlines. Why does that layer exist? It exists so that you can look at five things at one time and buy it in one place, right? And it exists because the interface layer there, they can innovate at the interface layer in ways that are far better than what the airlines do. But
came out with Flight Search. I mean,
yeah, and it's probably taken quite a bit of share. I mean, I use Google Flight. It's like an affiliate engine for flights.
It's a better interface.
So, but the guys, those layers exist. That aggregator layer exists in basically every category. If you go to buy insurance, there are companies that just wire the insurance companies up and allow you to compare five different insurance policies and buy them, right? I think these layers are going to be really resilient.
But the question is, how much of that is the revenue for especially big publishers, and how many people depend on it every day? Like, I can tell you, I don't know many people that read a lot of long form articles. People have quickly moved away from the news media to get their information. It's already happening. This is like final blow.
I don't know, man. I think that you risk being slightly hyperbolic when you say that people don't read long form articles. And you don't know people that read. I mean, I know people that read long form articles, Alex.
I don't know anyone who plays video games, Alex. Not as an adult.
I have younger friends.
I know children.
Okay. So let's just now go back to the layer cake, and we'll ask ourselves, what does AI do into that layer cake? It goes out and it gathers information, edits, performs tasks. Maybe it operates as an agent for the buyer. This is several years out, by the way. Okay. On the seller side, do sellers have AI agents that connect with the buyer AI agent? There's got to be both the seller side and the buyer side. I mean, we're talking at like very speculative long-term changes, probably that won't affect us for 5 years or more.
But search is now, and content. Right, let's stay on the content layer. What is the impact, and do you change where you're investing money if a lot of these, what did you call it, high carb content? I like that. It's a good brand name. If this high carb content is plummeting in value to eventually be zero, are you shifting?
But we've already gone over this endlessly, that content becomes more niche, more personal, higher value, that evergreen stuff is precious. That's all happening. We're already digesting that as an industry.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I think what's maybe important, and I know we've already digested that as an industry, but nearly everyone that we've invited to the podcast and asked about AI seemed to downplay it, saying the same stuff, which is, well, people still want to read this and they want to read something thoughtful and they trust our writers, and that's why they'll keep coming. I think it's underestimating this drive that Google has, which is to get to that Star Trek computer, to remove all friction and to own that space. And if you look at that being the motivation, where do you fit in that? There will be space. There's tons of tools that will
and there will
not
be
replaced
new spaces.
By
there will be new places absolutely. For optimization.
Do you know what's amazing? I went to SimilarWeb. Weather.com still gets 906 million visits.
It's like the 20th biggest site in the country. Yeah, it's huge.
Like, I mean, think about it. I mean, it does not get any more commoditized. And
AOL makes $400 million in profit. The spaceship is not over top of the White House.
But do you know why Weather.com gets that many visits, guys? It's because when you type weather in Google, that's the first site that comes up. Like, you're judging things based on a current model, and Google is telegraphing. It is telling you. It is saying, "Hey guys, here's where we're going." And everybody's going, yeah, I know you're saying that, but we're going to be fine. They're saying, yeah, no, I'm going to destroy everything you're doing. Don't worry about it. We still get plenty of traffic.
I don't know. Did you see that they say, let Google do the Googling for you?
Wow.
I think that's a sign where things are going.
And there's going to be, for every example where they go like, well, you know, vinyl still exists. Okay, but the industry doesn't run on vinyl. It runs on Spotify. And if you look at, if customers are asking for something and businesses have the motivations to build it for them, and you're stuck between those two pieces, you're not going to survive.
Troy, do you remember the magazine lifers who wouldn't give up on the idea that magazines and their essential role was never going to go back to where...
Are you baiting me?
Yes.
Do I remember?
Do you remember being one of
It's
those
a podcast,
people?
Troy. There's part performance.
I do remember,
Do you ever wonder that you're going to become the same one for websites? You're going to become one of those people?
No, no. I'm too sort of impatient. No, I don't think so. I mean,
all right, let's get on to. Oh, go on. You want to?
No, we'll save it.
Closing argument.
You can can I close up with something? I just want to be clear that I don't think AI chatbots are going to replace everything we do on computers. There are things we do on computers that are really great to do on computers. Photoshop, productivity tools, all that stuff. There's great things you can do on phones. But when it comes to getting information and a specific type of information and extracting it, if you have the AI agent acting as an editor and something that kind of creates content for you that you find compelling, it'll make you go to sites a lot less. And Google has no ambition of putting links on its front page after today. Like, if you think that you're going to see links on the front page in a few years,
I mean,
then you're deluded.
I totally disagree. And I think they'll be there for a lot longer than you think. And I think, Brian, that the use cases that they use for demos in Silicon Valley for all of these platform events are mostly psychotic. They're like, I just asked the agent that I'm going to, like, you know, I'm going to Malaysia and I needed a really, really great hotel on the beach and I needed reservations for Pilates and dinner. And I pressed a button and it came back with an agenda. I mean, no one does that. Okay. If you've ever had an assistant, it takes years to train a human being to do that for you.
But you're talking about booking a flight. Totally agree with that. And all the examples are like tech executive examples. Show me the best golf bag that will fit into a Porsche. Forget that. What I'm talking about is to the people we're talking to who write content on the internet, shit's about to hit the fan, I think. I mean, you should listen to the Hard Fork podcast. They were both really emotional about it. Aren't you guys getting calls from people?
Casey Newton has been processing this for a long time. Casey. Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, you can't change it, so you just have to roll it. I think one of the things that I really like about publishing is people have been through like 10, 15 existential crises that like a new one comes, you're just kind of like, okay. Yeah, it can be.
Okay.
You can carry on. But I want to get into this. I want to get into the reverse time machine. We're going to go forward in time. Remember those old TV shows? They would have the little music and then it would get blurry and they would go back in time.
Can we do that? A sad one here.
They always did that because they agreed to do so many episodes and they didn't feel like delivering the last couple. So they just did flashback episodes.
Clip episodes are cheap.
Let's go into a time machine and go 5 years forward and what this world of sort of tech media culture, but more in tech and media, looks like. Because I think about 5 years.
Is this a thought exercise?
Ago, a little bit, yeah, a little thought exercise. I have a feeling like things are going to be far different in 5 years. Could be wrong. I mean, a lot of this could be hype. But I just want to start with you. It's hard to look 5 years, I think, down the line. It's impossible to look longer than that. But give me
Two
the contours
three, then,
of
Alex,
where this
how about
is all
three
going.
Years?
Yeah, I kind of put some notes down. No, I wanted 5 years. I have some thoughts about all the big players, and I think they...
But paint us a picture of what are we doing?
Well, so in 5 years,
I'm going to pop us in, Alex.
Well, in 5 years...
Yeah, just enjoy.
In 5 years, we are communicating with our computers in a way that does feel like her, if we wanted to. And most of the menial tasks that we would go through, like going through settings or picking out a piece of information, can just be summoned by saying, hey, tell me this. And it's all very natural and you can interrupt the machine. And that's pretty ubiquitous on
billions of devices.
Billions of devices. It's not today. This is not the way it is today. But that's, and what that changes is that Google and Apple are pretty dominant in the space of giving you access to the content you want to reach. So most of the queries start with a question and they both provide not a series of links, but answers or a little paragraph or something like that. And that's going to change behaviors. The web will be have become a tab on Google. I think it'll be the old school web. It'll be like looking through, what were these called? Forums, you know, like a BBS. It'll be there. Yeah. And it'll maybe even kind of be sunset at some point. Meanwhile, you know, I think they will.
I love the word sunset. So you think that there's.
He literally just moved on after he sunset.
I know. It's like he killed the open web.
Sunset the fucking web. And he moved to the next bullet point in his list.
Sorry, Sir Tim. Does he get to keep his.
This is like when they shut down their RSS reader. But I do think both Google and Apple will invest heavily in their own on-device, very, very front and center media sources. So Google with YouTube, they will be super successful. YouTube is only going to benefit from this. And then Apple News, I think, is actually going to become a big player. They're signing a lot of deals and you won't even go somewhere else for news. You will ask Siri and Siri will say, oh, sure, you want to read an article? Here's this New Yorker article on Apple News, right? And so every publisher will need to be on Apple News. Every publisher will need to be on some sort of Google newsstand and YouTube, et cetera. And these systems will just control the means of access unless they're stopped by the government.
One note on Apple News, Semaphore actually had a really good piece today or earlier this week about how dominant Apple News has kind of quietly become and important to publishers. They get money from it. They like Apple News Plus, at least for
Times,
now.
Times was saying it's seven-figure revenue with Apple News.
Yeah, we had a deal like that years ago with Apple News. Yeah.
But here's the, neither of the companies I'm talking about is motivated to, I thought Google was, but this has changed with AI, is motivated to maintain the open web the way it is. They're motivated to push people to apps, to push people through their own news packaging, and potentially for Google to push for federated systems that allow them to have access to millions and millions of user posts that they can turn into valuable content for their users. So if you look at these motivations, the web could become something like a BBS.
And here's something that I think, so Google's obviously in the crosshairs of a lot of governments and particularly their stranglehold on the digital advertising system. If that's forced to decouple, if they pull that, like, watch out what you wait for, because nobody likes Google dominating this and that, but then it's always like, watch what you're wishing for, because if they pull out that economic incentive, and you heard this with Sundar Pichai's discussion with Nilay, and he said users are voting with their feet and that they're going to hide behind this is best for the users. And when they don't have a financial incentive, I don't think anyone, this isn't a morality play. It's about incentives. And if they don't have a financial incentive, forget it. I mean, look at what they're doing with Google News Initiative. They're saying to nonprofit publishers, oh, you know what? This California ad link tax bill, if that passes, we're going to pull the plug on this $300 million. They're just basically using them as human shields at the end of the day. They're hostages. Mm-hmm.
That was the funniest thing you said all day, by the way. I love that line.
Thank you. That's why I'm rolling it back out. I'm posting it to LinkedIn. I want to get
All right. Okay. Do you want to go through some of the conclusions here? Do you mind if I list off a few and then we can circle back?
Yeah. Open web was killed in an aside.
Well,
yeah.
guys, just before Troy gives us his next 5 years, for the last, I don't know, 80 episodes, I've been repeating the same thing. I've been called hyperbolic, and every week, whatever.
Alex. What do you want?
I mean, I really, I
you
love
haven't won
web.
Anything, Alex. You haven't won. Okay, let's go through. Let's
I'm
go
not,
through.
I'm not rooting for this to happen.
Granularity. Let's not
take
describe
Troy's last affiliate link. Is that when you will be happy?
Jesus Christ! Let's let you guys. Let's not describe the present and what Alex sees.
I think the web is
today.
Just going to be turned into a shopping tab, and that's it.
Alex, when you told me your news is read by Snoop Dogg, like in episode 3,
it was.
I knew where we were headed. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's a bunch of things for you guys to think about. All right. One is proliferation of entry points. This is a very big thing. And nobody can give up on owning the ultimate communicator device, as Alex described it from Star Trek. Meaning, look at what Meta's doing. They're saying, this is going to be free on all of our devices. And by the way, it's going to look a lot like search. It's going to look a lot like what search ends up looking like, because it's going to be the intersection of an index, a web index, and an LLM, which just gives publishers more places to be present and places to optimize. I'm just saying, it's a good thing to have a proliferation of entry points. Perplexity made that kind of service in like about a year, year and a half, so lots of people can make it, right? Browsers are going to change as an entry point. They're going to integrate. We're going to finally see browsers get smart, and they're going to do more things on our behalf. And we're going to see mail get smart too, because our inboxes are a shit show right now, because the inbox was never meant to be your media consumption area, and it has become your media consumption area, and something needs to be done about it. My next point, AI redefines hardware. I think that we've seen a couple of, you know, swing and a miss with the rabbit and with the AI pin from Humane. But even like it in a period of, I don't know what it is, 6 months, we've seen lots of innovation in hardware. Microsoft is the most recent. If Microsoft can actually make a laptop that I want to buy, that'll give you a sense of how much innovation is to come with the integration of AI on a chip, operating system, hardware. Lots more to come there. I think Meta will do a lot more in hardware. I think we're going to see concentration around established media brands, because I still think they play an important aggregation and trust role, and they're going to be really important in this ecosystem, whether that's audio, video, text, whatever it is, their manifestation inside of these new entry points. We're going to see more concentration around media brands. In fact, it starts to look more like ye old newsstand than it does the blogosphere. Brands really matter, right?
Interesting.
I think that SEO and SEM, same game. New gatekeepers, you're still going to optimize your content to be delivered inside of new interfaces, for whether that's a chatbot or whatever, but we're still going to be slinging content around and paying for content, same as it ever was, always will be. I think Google is going to take share from publishers, but they're going to lose it elsewhere because of all these new distribution points. Their reaction to the pressure that they're under is to suck more in. And that's what they're doing right now, to put more time, take more attention, pull more attention into the SERP. But there's going to be new places that compete with them. I think chat is going to be free. I think I got to cancel my OpenAI $20 a month thing and my Gemini $20 a month thing, because they're going to be underwritten by advertising and B2B APIs. And so I think you're going to see chat free. And the reason you're going to see it free is because Meta's already made it free. And you're going to see way more of that. And I think also, per Alex's really astute comment, training and inference are getting much cheaper, like now, and faster, obviously. We saw that with the OpenAI announcement. But the more of it that can be done in your own hardware, the cheaper it's going to be. I think that vessels for UGC will do very well across the board. We already talked about that. Why? Because it's really valuable to trap millions of contributors inside of a system and put an interface on it. And people want to communicate, and it's kind of like ground zero for knowledge. And I think that's just going to continue to take share from media.
You mean like Reddit?
Reddit, TikTok, YouTube. I mean, that's kind of obvious. But I think that one thing that we forget is the follow the money thing. Monetization's going to win always. And one of the things about OpenAI becomes Netscape, I think. It dies or
wow,
gets absorbed by someone else.
Wow, you're bearish on OpenAI, huh?
Well, I think that they don't have distribution. They don't have monetization. So they're going to go to Apple and they're going to try to get distribution. I just think that every new, like their spring announcement compared to Google's, I feel like the gap is getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
And
the only way OpenAI competes,
it's going to be hard,
right,
to stay
if they
on
own
front.
Hardware. I mean, they
look
have
at
to
the Google's advantage: identity, hardware, cloud, search, monetization, UGC. There's just so much that someone like Google has.
I don't think there's a way in with hardware, Brian, because I don't think AI is waiting for the perfect hardware device. I think we already have a pretty good one, which is the phone. So it's not a platform shift in that way, but they're definitely going to try AI, hardware, open AI.
So I think that having monetization to pay for inference becomes incredibly strategic, and the two companies that have it are Meta and Google. Becomes really important. They have billing relationships with every business on the planet, and that's really hard to build, takes a really long time, and the technology that underpins it is very sophisticated.
Okay, so your winners are it's
well, I'm not done yet. I'm almost done, and then we'll go to, we'll reevaluate the list.
That's great.
So
love it.
Advertising becomes, this is interesting, advertising becomes a game of managing information proliferation. Like, what is advertising in this world, like where a lot of the information extraction is done via AI? And so advertising is both managing performance, managing the cost of performance, and getting your information out there. I think this is going to be catastrophic for, I mean, it's also activations and doing dinners and all the bullshit you do.
Thank you.
It's going to be catastrophic for the agency groups, I think, unless they manage just to become central to this kind of information proliferation.
Wait,
of,
why did you drop that on Jonathan when he was here?
Oh, I don't know, because I was trying to, because he's a senior person at a company. You got to be nice to him.
Yeah, that is true.
And then finally, I think all of this takes much longer than you think. Change has been happening in the SERP for a long time. The seller endpoints are really slow to change. Just look at how long it's taken for advertising to change in the sort of digital revolution writ large. It's just going to take a long time. And then the companies that can dance are going to do really well. And I think Meta's shown that they can dance because they're led by a founder leader. I think Satya Nadella is like CEO of the decade. He's made that huge, enormous company dance. Apple's been really slow, actually. And we'll see how they respond in the next, you know, year or so. But they've driven by lots of new opportunities, and they've been really slow. And Google, I know we counted them out earlier in the year, but the array of capabilities that they have, they can make so many mistakes and still be dominant. And yeah. I think Google's going to end up doing really well.
It is interesting how Google went from like, oh man, they're a mess. They've got sit-ins. They got all these entitled employees. And then all of a sudden it just like changes. And it's like, oh, they're going to be more dominant than ever.
I mean, I think they're still a mess. They're still a mess. Like that announcement was just, it feels very disorganized, but they have so much infrastructure. They have optical fiber. They have servers. Like that's all the stuff that you need to get this right.
They have the biggest mobile OS. They have a decade lead.
And Apple is also kind of stuck because I don't think Apple want to do a chatbot that can hallucinate and say crazy shit. Like they can't have that.
You know, so I want to just say something about the affiliate business, because I know that Alex will dismiss it slight just like that. And I think if you're actually in one of these businesses, guys, as I am, and you see what it takes to wire up a couple of thousand, these are advertisers, but they're performance advertisers. So you're literally delivering leads on a toll system to these advertisers. If you see what it takes to wire them up and manage lead flow into them, be it through a chatbot or through Google search, you realize that like that stuff doesn't disappear overnight. It evolves very, very slowly. We're talking about the behavior and wiring of millions of businesses that rely on the internet to get leads and business. Like it's not going to change overnight. It's just not. There's too many actors in the system. And I think then what happens is you kind of put your boots on and you get to work and you realize there's a new system that needs to be optimized, and the companies that can move inside of the new paradigm quickly and smartly and see where the gaps are, where the arb is, where the opportunities to aggregate are, do really well again and again and again. And this is now, I don't know, my 25th year on the internet. This is a big change, but it's we've seen big changes. And so I think it's going to look a lot like, I don't think the spaceship has arrived at the White House. I think that some of our, just step back for a sec. We get a little kooky sometimes. Okay, now your new PC can remember that you looked at a pair of white tennis shoes like yesterday. It's cool. I love it. I want it. But it's like not changing a lot. Now I can draw an apple orchard like with the help of a computer. It's not fucking changing things, guys. Right? And so we're not about to become an advanced species. We're still the same. That's my rant for today. Can nice. We go to okay. good product now?
Are we gonna have web pages?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, we are gonna have web pages.
Oh, really? Good.
Yes, we are.
Cool. I'm interested.
What is a web page, guys? What is a web page but just a database query that brings together a bunch of elements and puts it on a page and in an organized fashion? If your database query that puts it on a page is better than Google's, then a consumer will use it. Google can't do everything in one little interface. They can't. They won't. They can't. They haven't. So, Brad, yeah. get a mortgage because you're going to be around for a while.
Mortgage? I'm interested in your point that it sounds like you're saying that traditional brands that broadly defined are going to do better than sort of upstart individual brands. Like, I think I'll just go with the sort of received wisdom. Like, to me, I go back to the Bezos thing, focus on things that won't change versus trying to predict things that will change. And in the media world, it seems to me that we're seeing the end of mass media. So I would just sort of wonder about why you think that brands will play as central a role versus there's going to be an explosion of brands like there was in the 1920s and before.
Okay. So one thing I've observed is, despite all of this endless kind of agita around the death of all of these media brands, that I spend a lot of time and I see in my feeds content from the media brands I've known for a really long time. Whether that's, some of them, by the way, are lesser than they used to be, but whether it's The Atlantic or Vanity Fair or the New York Times, like on and on and on, right? Even Wired, magazines that we thought would have died a long time ago. And these are still businesses that serve a function in aggregating content, in creating trust, in creating a long-term arc under which content can be created. I think that in a world of a compressed sort of distribution point like chat, that seeing a link from an established brand you know, rather one versus one you don't know, I think it still has a lot of value. Now, having said all that, I would say that my media consumption behavior has increasingly, individuals have occupied a bigger part of that pie, but it certainly hasn't upended established media. Whether you're looking at YouTube or Instagram or your email newsletters or your feed, like, brands are around and I think they will play a role for a long, long, long time. So I think that sometimes we exaggerate the death of these things. And I used to run a company that had 25 brands. It still has 25 brands. And it might make less money than it used to, and it might be more of a scramble to find distribution, monetization, and all of that. But I think that those brands will live for a long time. And so that's my take on it. I look at emergent content creators. Like, Puck is just a new way of aggregating content under a media brand. They've taken advantage of an opportunity to kind of reinvent how the spoils are shared between owner and creator and to change the format of content. And I think that works, right?
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I, my experience, my consumption is completely different. I was thinking through it, and I don't think I consume any media brand regularly. It's all individuals.
But you're a weirdo.
Am I? or am I just from the future, Troy?
Yeah, you could be from the future.
You know that spaceship that's 2029. That spaceship that's hovering over the White House right now. I beamed down from it from the future, and I'm telling you.
So Alex,
get off the lawn.
So you're saying to me, and I take this very seriously, and we might need to bring Seb back on the podcast, but you're saying that your media behaviors are more like the next generation than an old guy like me.
My media consumption
is clearly, answer for you.
My media consumption is very millennial, and I think it taps into Gen Z a little bit lately, but even that is too scattered, and I think.
But
I think,
Alex,
you'll find
you
it's a lot
you read
of
The Verge
individuals.
All the time. You read The Verge. You listen to podcasts that are branded media companies.
But if Nilay would move from The Verge and started his own podcast, I'd go listen to that. I have no affinity to the brand.
And I think that, to me, that's not going to change. I don't see that changing. I don't see the power of, I think they're going to morph, and I think they're going to lean more towards the individuals. And I think Puck is better positioned, honestly, than Vanity Fair, for sure. I mean, that's from
But there's always the past. Been generational transitions in media brands, right, Brian?
I mean, I think that there'll be another generational transition and some brands will get sent off to the SEO glue factory and that's okay.
Okay. But before the we go only too media deep brand on this point, this...
Okay, the only piece of... In the only podcast I listen to that specifically I couldn't tell you who the host is the Up First by NPR. I don't remember, and I just listened to that. But everything, it's like I've got Bill Burr, I've got Sam Harris, I've got Ben Thompson.
That mirrors listening to talk shows of old. I don't think that's that different. But before we take up all the oxygen, Alex, I would... Brian also has to contribute to this future casting segment.
Sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, I still, again, I focus on like the things that won't change. And to me, this will continue and will accelerate the end of mass media era. And by that, I don't mean that everyone is going out of business. Of course they're not going to. But if you look at the history of media, it was a strange period in which it consolidated into mass media. I went back and in 1920 alone, there was like a newspaper for every like 230,000 people. We're going back to a period where there's going to be just far more content. There already is far more. And that, by its very nature, is going to erode the power of a lot of brands. It's going to be managed decline, but it's going to be decline. And that's okay. I mean, it's just like you get older, I can't run as fast or as far as I used to. You just sort of accept it. I don't think it's necessarily bad, but I don't see that changing. And I only see it accelerating with AI. And I only see accelerating media brands looking for ways to make money that do not rely on advertising at all. And particularly in the real world. I don't think that humans, I think they're actually going to want to congregate even more, even at dinners and things of that. I think that's a good position to be in because I have no idea what the ad systems of the future are. I'm pretty sure people are still going to be having dinners in 5 years. I'm going to bet on it. They've been having dinners since the beginning of time, like the cave, they're having dinner parties in there. I think that happens. And I think the other thing that is, I don't see how this doesn't have more emphasis on depth versus breadth when it comes to media brands. That's just only going to accelerate.
You got to go deep. You got to be expert. You got to be niche. You got to be all those things that we always talk about.
Yeah. And like that's, to me, it's all going to, it's better to focus on that than trying to game out who's going to win some intergalactic battle between Sam Altman and Sundar Pichai and Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg. That's like impossible to game out.
Is it?
Am I wrong?
Well, we just did it though. And I'm sure we were. And
nobody's going to remember in 5 years anyway. So we'll have a recall. Should we go on to good product? I like keeping the pace up.
Yeah, it's good. I like it.
I'd have to start the good product segment with acknowledgement that playoff hockey is just really the best. I'm happy that Edmonton beat the Canucks because Edmonton is a thankless place. So then
have you ever been to Edmonton?
Yeah, in and out. Kind of that's my turf. From Saskatchewan, so it's not where you want to vacation.
Well, Edmonton's in Manitoba, isn't it?
No, it's in Alberta, but close.
Shit. Yeah.
Winnipeg is in Manitoba. So, yeah, we're cheering for the Rangers now, and New York is a great hockey town, so I'm excited about new playoff hockey. Allison Roman's cold carrot cake I'm going to make for sure, or I'm going to get someone to make. I love Allison Roman, and I like her recipes, so someone's going to make that in this house. I have a couple of other things just to mention. When you don't have something super solid, sometimes you have to put a list together. And so I did that. I got to tell you, YouTube Premium is the best money spent in streaming. I've probably said that before on this podcast, but I love YouTube Premium. No ads, YouTube all the time. Perfect. So good. And I know why people love it. And two other things on the media front, Brian. I think that the show Sugar on Apple TV, I really loved watching it. It's kind of imperfect, but was great. And I love the sort of melancholy and hope of Colin Farrell, who's my man crush of the week. I love Colin Farrell. He's great. You know, there's another thing is, I think that we forget, because of the streamers, we forget the great feeling that you can have. And I mentioned this last week of live television. And this experiment by John Mulaney. I went back and I watched the fifth episode. I don't know if you guys have watched this, called Everybody's in LA.
I stopped watching it.
By the time they got to the fifth one, it's this kind of weird combination of Eric Andre and The Tonight Show. So to me, it represents every generation has a different sense of what's funny. And this one is really taking the talk show genre and kind of mixing it up. And it's interesting to watch. On the fifth episode, they had two of my favorite people. They had David Letterman, who I loved since I was in college, and Bill Hader, who I think is hilarious. And I love Bill Hader. So it's kind of weird and off kilter. And I'm excited if this is a sign of the live TV that's to come from the streamers. I'm excited.
What makes it different? I haven't seen the show.
Well, it's live. It's on Netflix. They'll bring out they'll bring out five guests on the couch at once. Last night they had a earthquake. They had a theme. So they had an earthquake expert come out with David Letterman. Then they had Pete Davidson, someone else, her name is escaping me, and Bill Hader. And it just was kind of weird. And then they would cut it in with these weird kind of vignettes from Los Angeles that were kind of surreal. You should watch it. It's very weird. The set is also really strange, like a kind of 80s living room in LA.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
That's what I got. That's what I got for you mofos.
I like new genres. It's good.
Anyway, what's new with you? What kind of great services or products are touching you in magical and mystical ways?
Me? Mm-hmm. I ran by an amazing tree. This is like one y'all appreciate. You know something? I run on this road all the time and I just recognized the tree. And it had these beautiful orange flowers and it was a gorgeous tree. And you know what I was thinking? I was like, that is also owned by private equity because it was on North Bay Road where all the rich people live. And I was like, that is beautiful and it's owned by private equity.
They should sell it off, chop it down.
So make big chopsticks.
Yeah, a nice Brian. Well, never ever criticize me for bringing up a fig again. And Alex, anything?
Private equity owned beautiful trees.
Anything touch you this week?
Oh, dang. I did have a good product.
You should tap the memory functionality.
Oh, okay, here's my good product. For years, I've seen people in their email signatures show that their email was managed by Superhuman. And it's like a $30 a month email client, which I thought is ridiculous. And they used to need a live onboarding session. And I finally bit the bullet and tried it. And it is amazing how much just the speed and snappiness of something can change the experience. And I'm sold. It's a good product. It's very expensive, but it works better than my other email clients.
Well, you didn't like the, what is that thing called? Side chat or something?
I did. It just didn't work very well. It was too slow. This is very fast.
Okay. All right. I got to check that. I do think one of the things I would just pull out that you had mentioned, Troy, was about the inbox. And I think it's underappreciated with all of the consternation about search is what AI is going to do to newsletter land. Because it's clear that a lot of, again, it's just misplaced incentives. There's so much, anytime anything works in publishing, people overdo it. And then tech companies step in on behalf of the user, maybe in their own interest, and they solve problems in a way that hurt the people that caused them in the first place. And it's a tragedy of the commons, but AI is coming for email newsletters. The program I use just segregates them all into one tab. Pretty soon they're just gonna, when you look at those demos of Google and it uses the receipts, okay, get me all the receipts and just put them in one place and just organize them. Guess what? They're going to do the same with email newsletters. Why won't they just pull out all your email newsletters and summarize them, give you like, it's just a lot of times you're making money off of friction that doesn't really add value in publishing. And I think that is coming. It's going to be a big impact on B2B because it really depends on email. So,
well, one last thing is I always find it interesting to reflect on why one listens to a podcast and why one goes back to a podcast repeatedly. I think podcasts are kind of sticky in the medium term, meaning like you'll establish a behavior and you'll listen to it for a while, like meaning like a year. And sometimes you'll just get sick of the people, just like you maybe get sick of people in your life.
Oh, yeah. And you got to take breaks. You got to take breaks. Bill Simmons, I've taken like 3 years off from the guy.
And to our listeners, take a break from us now. Now's a good time.
No, but I was thinking to the listeners, we used to do a lot of private hating on the All In guys, and I understand why. And then this week, I thought it was notable that Brian had come around and sort of fully embraced the All In podcast.
I said David Sacks was the best character on the show. Yeah. I stand by it. He is. He's the most well-rounded character. They each have their lanes, and I've grown.
Well, it's
I
worth
get
noting,
it now.
You had said, I basically really like the podcast. I admit, I like the podcast. I do listen to it with regularity. And Alex said that his life is 15% better since he stopped listening to it.
It's good. I look forward to it. I really do. They drop it on a Friday. I like, you know.
My anxiety's lower. I'm less filled with rage.
I actually genuinely
forgot about the podcast until you guys started mentioning it.
They seem like they're going away from guests that they didn't, because I think it is really interesting to try.
Well, they did
to their
guests
different
back to back.
Well, the Sheryl Sandberg thing was kind of ridiculous, but I mean, she was on it to promote her like documentary, and it was, I don't know, the whole thing was, it reminded me of like a version of the late night shows when people go on to promote things, and just that was, it's just not, it's nothing to do with the material. It's just everything to do with like, that's a strange fit, but you got to try new things.
Yeah. I mean, we had the CEO of Time on.
Did you sit that one out of protest? I thought you were really the doctor.
No. I
what did
was,
Time do to you?
Nothing. I just had something better to do. I also think it's a lot when there's like three of us and a guest.
Well, I think that's what they found, is that there's different formats for podcasts, and it's difficult sometimes to mix the two. My First Million is one I really like, and even with the title, it's not as bad as the title says. And Sam's really smart, and Sean too, and I think they have a really good rapport.
Those guys are great podcasters.
Yeah, they really worked at it.
Yeah. I don't think we work at ours hard enough.
Could be.
And Brian, I'm not going to go to Cannes, because I realize that Cannes has just become an ad tech conference and I can't deal. And so I'm going to Paris instead.
Wait, you're going to France, but you're not going to Cannes. That's a move. Well, right. I'm going. Actually, it would be great for you to join. We're trying to get OpenAI to join. I'm doing a conversation with Neil Vogel.
They'll send you a seller. Yeah.
Neil Vogel and with Sarah Fisher. Sarah's going to join me for this. It's going to be a little tag team.
I like both those people a lot. So good.
So come. We're trying, and hopefully OpenAI, we're going to talk about AI and publishing. It's they've got a villa, the Dot Dash Villa. We're going to have it at. If anyone's listening, you want to invite? I'll put the
RSVP.
Why
don't you invite Alex to go? He'd be good at the Dot Dash.
Yeah, do you want to come?
When is that?
June 21st, I think it is, the Thursday of that week, 4 p.m., 3 to 5 p.m.
Does it pay for my tickets? I only travel business.
From Paris? Yes.
No, from I want private from Sonoma. There's a little airport here. That'll work.
Thank you all for listening. And if you like this podcast, I hope you do. Please leave us a rating and review on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast that takes ratings and reviews. Always like to get those. And if you have feedback, do send me a note. My email is bmorrissey@therebooting.com. Be back next week.
How do you say canapé, Alex?
Canapé.
How do you say it in German?
Canapé.
All right. You guys are idiots. We'll see you later.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.